Well, aren't you a regular Nancy Drew?
I learned that from the Nancy Drew detective.
Okay, go.
You think you can follow the clues and solve the case of the missing condiment, Nancy Drew?
You guys have read every Nancy Drew mystery ever written.
Nancy, please tell me you're joking.
Wow, you suck at this Nancy Drew stuff. You should get a new hobby.
My name is Carson Drew, and this is my assistant, Nancy.
Nancy Drew.
It's curtains for you, Miss Drew.
Nancy Drew strikes again.
A regular Nancy Drew.
Well, hello, hello, regular Drews.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome to episode 81. We have a very exciting topic for you today. I think a lot of you are going to be very excited to hear that we are covering another episode of The CW Show.
I'm certainly very excited.
This is going to be episode 2, The Secret of the Old Morgue. We are kind of going in order here now because, of course, with the show, you kind of have to.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But yeah.
I'm so excited for this one. I don't know how you are feeling about it, but...
You don't... No, I am... Okay, how do... What do I say? No, I am excited to talk about this episode of the show. I did really like this episode. I think... I go back and forth. I'm so ambiguous about this show. But, like, I like it a lot, and then I get to a point where it's like I can't do it anymore, but I haven't gotten to that point yet in the season, so this episode I'm very excited to talk about. There's a lot that I really do love about the show, and there's a lot that I think the show does really well. I think the show is really enjoyable, and I really understand why a lot of people like it, and I do like it. I do like a lot of it, but I just, at a certain point, I don't know, it just gets kind of old to me.
That's totally fair. Yeah.
But it's not
for everyone.
Yeah. No, I think this is still a great episode of TV. I'm very excited to talk about it. I think the thing that brings me the most joy about this episode and about the series in general is just the chemistry that all of the actors have is just
absolutely
electric.
Yes.
I don't know who's responsible for casting, but it is so, so good. So well cast. All of the actors are so talented and so they just work so well together. And I just really appreciate all of their work because they're truly a joy to watch on screen. So
absolutely.
Yeah.
This show was really well cast, and I think that the way that they set up the dynamics of the five core members of the Drew crew, Nancy, Bess, George, Nick, and Ace, I think that their dynamics work really, really well together. Mm-hmm. And they're just, they play off of each other so well. It ends up being really funny at some points, which is nice.
Yeah. Because I think the issue that I have with the show is that it gets to be, as a lot of the CW shows do, I don't think this is a particular failing of, you know, the Nancy Drew show as more as it is just a failing of the genre in general. It gets to be where they constantly have to like one up themselves. They get to the point where things are just like so intense and so like extra, but it always gets resolved and the characters end up becoming a vehicle for the plot instead of the plot being a vehicle for the characters. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so by that, I mean that, like, we no longer really care about the character traits of the characters themselves. We care more about the plot, and the plot isn't good enough to do that. Ultimately, the plot should be how your characters are acting, like how your characters are responding to events, not not the events making your characters respond differently.
It makes sense. Yeah, definitely.
But so I think it falls into that same pattern, but it hasn't done that yet.
Yeah.
So
It's so hard to talk about the show which I mean, obviously we're just talking about episode two today, but there's so much that it contributes to the larger story of the entire season. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to talk about some parts of it because you want to talk about the whole season.
Sure.
Or even the whole show, because I think that unfortunately it gets even worse on that point. And like seasons 3 and 4, it gets to be where it's like, just, oh, what if we threw these plot elements at you that don't really make sense of mm-hmm. why Nancy, well, not that it doesn't make sense, more that it just doesn't feel true to Nancy's character that she would respond in right. certain ways or that she'd do certain things. So yeah unfortunately, yeah, so it's hard to talk about it without also just looking at the broader scope of how right. it just has a trend of doing that.
Yeah, and I think that's the issue, I think, ultimately with us, like, being a Nancy Drew podcast, right? Because mm-hmm. that we can't, it's really hard to look at a piece of material without looking at and be primarily focused on the character of right. Nancy Drew, right? Because that's the whole mm-hmm. reason that we're covering it.
Of course.
We wouldn't be covering it if this was just some random other TV show. Trust me, we have lots of TV shows that we love and would do that. Yes. But that's not what this podcast is about. You know, it's about Nancy Drew. And so it's really hard to look at something and take it out of that context, right?
Mm-hmm, of course.
We can't just be like, oh, it's just a good show, you know, because it's not about the fact that it's just a good show. It's about the fact that it's a show about Nancy. So,
yeah.
So there's a lot of tension with that. And I can, like, again, like, I know you really love the show, Corey, and I really love parts of the show, and I know that the show has lots and lots of fans. And so it's like, how do we interact with it and critique it and consider it within this larger framework of Nancy, but also as its own entity, you know? Mm. So it's a complicated little dance, I feel like we're doing.
I am now on my 5th rewatch since we covered the pilot back in October.
Wow.
Of the entire show.
And that's just when you really kicked off, right? Is when we exactly. rewatched the pilot. Yeah.
Yes. Because I'd seen the show prior to that. And then, like I said, on that episode, or the episode right after that, I don't know, just something about covering it on this podcast and looking at it through the new lens of like trying to be critical and give a real evaluation of it. Mm-hmm. I started liking it a lot more that I looked at it,
so
I guess, from a different angle.
Yeah.
I almost hate to admit it that I didn't love the show at first because it feels like I'm being overly critical of it, but it's true. Unfortunately, it took me a little while mm-hmm. to warm up to it and actually start to enjoy it as much as I do now, which I do really enjoy it now, and I'm enjoying doing those rewatches. There's definitely some things that it's fair to be critical about or, you know, wanted some improvement in mm-hmm. that area, but mm-hmm. no, I feel like at first, I don't think that I was really aware of the show until after the pilot had already aired, and I think that I found out about it because, yeah, this was back in 2019. I think I'd heard some like rumors that they were like working on the show, but I wasn't really like aware that, hey, it's airing right now
right.
and, you know, come watch it. I think I'd heard about it afterwards. And I want to say that the most like talk about it that I saw was on Reddit, and it was people in the Nancy Drew subreddit,
sure.
which is 99% like games fans, and
yeah.
people did
can
not
be a tough place.
Super enjoy it. Yeah. So,
yes.
And it's a great community. I really mm-hmm. enjoy being there. But honestly, they didn't love it so much
sure.
over there, at least what I was reading of it.
Mm-hmm.
And there are definitely a lot of fans of the show, but there are a lot of people that really don't see it as mm-hmm. their Nancy. And I just want to defend it a little bit.
Yeah.
I think I went into it because I saw a lot of people saying, this isn't Nancy.
Yeah.
She's like way more mature. She's having sex. OMG,
oh,
how scandalous.
God.
Like, this isn't the Nancy that we grew up with. But, mm-hmm. you know, now that I've rewatched it and had the chance to really think about it as a whole series, I mm-hmm. think that it is Nancy. And I've told
yeah.
you this before.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that for a lot of cases, Nancy is about meeting girls and young women where they're at.
Mm-hmm.
You know, historically, that has always been the trend. Edward Stratemeyer saw a hole in the market where girls aren't getting catered to with books. Why don't we give them what they want?
Right.
And so we started that tradition. That's how Nancy Drew started. And then we get to the 50s and 60s. Ooh, girls aren't really appreciating some of the stereotypes that we've put in the books. Let's update it. Let's give
yeah.
them what they want. Let's remove some of those things that they're not enjoying. And then we get to, you know, it happens a few times more over the decades. And then another good example is Her Interactive. Nobody's mm-hmm. making computer games for girls. Let's meet them where they're at.
Right.
And so just because it's not maybe the Nancy Drew that's catered to what we were expecting mm-hmm. when we were younger, it is different than yeah. the Lonnie Manila that we grew up with. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But I think that they are meeting girls where they're at, you yeah. know, today. Yes. Like, what is the biggest, what is the biggest TV show for teens right now? Mm-hmm. It's Riverdale. So they mm-hmm. see what's working, what teens are wanting mm-hmm. from their entertainment. And they kind of, you know, kind of met them where they're at. So I think that it does do a lot of things really well with Nancy Drew, like the basic structure of we've got two separate mysteries that we know as the reader, as the watcher, that they're going to connect in some way. Nancy doesn't quite know how they're going to connect yet, but we know that they're going to connect. We've got the dynamic of the Drew crew that they do really well. They do a really good job of doing like the stereotypical cliffhangers. I feel like mm-hmm. each episode, they do a really good job of setting up the cliffhanger, just like it would be at the end of a chapter. And it just kind of builds off of each other from there. So I think that it does a lot of things really well. I think that it is definitely in the spirit of Nancy Drew, even yeah. if it's not a direct adaptation of what the books were or what the games were that we grew up mm-hmm. with, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with that 100% on everything, on every point that you said. And just because like, yeah, just because I don't enjoy it, just because like some people don't see it and say, oh, this is my Nancy, doesn't mean that it's not valuable. Doesn't mean mm-hmm. that it's not a good representation, even just not for me, mm-hmm. you know, but yeah. it's really, it could be really valuable to, like you were saying, to young people today to see what Nancy Drew looks like, you know, for them. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 100%.
I saw a lot of people saying like, this isn't Nancy Drew. This isn't who she is as a character, but mm-hmm. I don't really agree. Yeah. She's different and she's newer, but I don't think that, you know, if we had, let's say for example, that no updates had ever been made to Nancy.
Yeah.
I don't think she'd still be a character. 1930s no. Nancy would not be popular. It wouldn't have been popular with us as children, mm-hmm. unfortunately.
No.
Hurts to say, but
yeah,
it's the truth. I think that if you don't update Nancy, there's no hope for her continuing to be embraced by the general public.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the only reason like I ever read Nancy Drew was because my mom read her, and those were from, and the reason why was because of the revisions of the '50s, you know, mm-hmm. like she was born in the '60s. And so like, that's why,
yeah,
you know, is because those became repopularized because of that. And those new printings and all of the work that, Harriet Stradmire Adams did to, you know, get those revisions out there. But then I think also like when you're talking about that, I think a lot about Barbie, and I know we've talked about Nancy yeah. Drew and Barbie a lot. But just the parallels there is just kind of really undeniable. And like the way that Barbie has existed, like from honestly the same time frames, like the same time yeah. periods as Nancy Drew, you know, from the 30s up until now, there has been a lot of difference in the way that Barbie looks, what Barbie does, you know, how they market Barbie and all of that stuff. But ultimately what Barbie is, I'm sorry, this is not a Barbie podcast, but
it could be.
But what Barbie is a vehicle. Right? She's a vehicle for girls to be able to see themselves mm-hmm. and to create and to grow and learn and all of this stuff. And that's exactly what Nancy is.
Absolutely.
And so the fact is like, yeah, she has to change. Like, she can't be stagnant, because if she is stagnant, then she can't operate that way. She can't serve her function. She can't serve her role, which is a vehicle for girls to learn, to aspire, to grow, you know? So, mm-hmm. so yeah, I'm all for it.
Yeah. Even like 1960s Nancy for us, as you know, if we were 10 years old today, I don't think that 1960s Nancy would be enough to really have mm-hmm. gotten
oh,
us
no,
on board
absolutely.
With loving her. And unfortunately, sorry, millennials, like Lonnie Manila is just not up to date enough for today's mm-hmm. young girls and teenagers. And
yeah,
whatever is enough to get people interested in Nancy and meeting them where they're at, seeing, you know, what works for them, I think we should embrace it. Even though we're millennials.
Mm-hmm.
The Her Interactive Nancy was made for us as a group of young girls. And I have tried to like go out of my way and like see what fans today, people who are just fans of the show, maybe who just saw it because they were watching Riverdale, and then that happened to come on the same channel, you know, like maybe they just happened to stumble upon it. They are, the teens today are going and discovering Her Interactive because of this show, which is just, I mean, what better could you want? Because, I mean, maybe they don't really have any exposure to Nancy Drew, and maybe this show isn't what maybe you and I would want to present as being the ideal version of Nancy's character, but they are still falling in love with Nancy because of this show, and going and reading the books for the first time because they're so interested in the show, and they're going and playing these Her Interactive games. I've seen them on Twitter freaking out, like, oh my gosh, did you guys know that Nancy and Ned had all this drama in the Captive Curse, and somebody needs to be paying attention to this because these games are awesome, and they had no idea that they were existed. Yeah, I'm seeing that all the time on, you know, on social media and stuff, and I just, I love it so much because I just, you know, it tells you, the next generation does love Nancy just as much as we did. And it makes me feel good to know that she's going to just live on for a little bit longer because of that.
Yeah. It's about keeping the legacy alive.
Yes.
That's what it's about. And it's really
special.
A
very long-winded way to go about saying that. But yeah, the very succinct way to put it. Yeah. Yes. Thank you.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Well, now that we've gotten that out of the way.
Yes. Got it out of my system.
Gotten all of our feelings out about it.
All that to say, if you don't love it already, give it another chance.
Right.
Even if it's still not for you, just give it another rewatch. And if it's still not for you, that's fine. But, you know,
yes, ma'am.
Don't hate it just because it's not for you.
You're feeling called out.
No, I don't mean you specifically. I just mean anyone who maybe didn't enjoy it at first. Allow yourself to enjoy it, you know. Mm-hmm. Even if it's just a stupid teen show.
Yeah.
Indulge yourself. Let yourself enjoy it. And appreciate all the fun Easter eggs and stuff at the very least. Because there are a good amount of those in the show.
Oh, wait. Okay. I'm sorry. I'm not quite done yet.
Okay. Yes.
No. So, I mean, just talking about all this makes me really think about how we constantly villainized things that teen girls like. Because teen girls like them. So, well, you know, I do wonder if part of the reason why I don't like the show, it may not be true, but part of the reason I don't like the show may be because of some kind of internalized, like, sexism, you know, of just, like, not being susceptible to, you know, what is new and what is, you know, exciting. Because, I mean, to people who aren't really familiar with this whole kind of way of thinking, but just thinking about how throughout the entirety of, like, the span of the world, things that teen girls have liked get viewed as, like,
guilty pleasures,
less than frivolous, or just, you know, not serious, and so not respectable, not respected, right? But then those things that they do like actually turn out to be huge and massive. Like, I think one of the biggest examples of this is the Beatles, right? You know, they were originally like a teeny bopper band. They were a pop group. Like, teen girls were obsessed with the Beatles. But then the Beatles became massive. Yeah. And of course, you know, we still reference them today. We still listen to that music. I think it's also really interesting to think about that in the context of language, right? Like, things that teen girls say and the way teen girls talk, like thinking about saying things like and talking like a valley girl and all of this stuff, all of those kinds of things get kind of synthesized into, like, just absolutely everything. It becomes the way that we talk. And yet we look down upon the things that teen girls do and the things that they say, even though we should know by now that actually they're one of the most forward thinking, eye on the future, smart consumers. And yet we constantly look down on it because it is of teenage girls, right? So, you know, thinking about this TV show in that way, it's like, okay, well, maybe I just need to get with the program.
And again, there's totally valid. If it's not your thing, if you don't enjoy it, don't force yourself to sit through something you don't enjoy, obviously.
It's not about that.
If that's the only thing holding you back is that you've heard bad things about it, or that you're expecting to go into something that's crap, don't let that stop you, because you may end up enjoying it more than you think.
Right.
So.
right?
That, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Now I'm done. I think. I don't hold me to that. But I do want to go ahead and start talking about The Secret of the Old Morgue.
Yes.
Actually, first of all, is this title supposed to be a reference to the Rue Morgue, the Edgar Allan Poe stuff? I mean, there are definitely little Poe references throughout the episode because Nancy is breaking into a morgue,
of course.
Spoiler alert in the episode. So, you know, there's some of that, but I'm just interested in the title.
So I love all of the titles from this show. All of them, some of them are just like directly taken from the book titles. Like, mm-hmm. There's an episode called The Hidden Staircase.
Right.
But then some of them are just kind of styled in the mm-hmm. way a Nancy Drew title would normally be written. So like Secret of the Old Attic, Secret of the Old Clock, Secret of the Old Morgue, because we're breaking into a morgue. There is also, I'm sure you noticed, at the very beginning shot, because we leave off from the last episode, it's kind of a reference to The Secret in the Old Attic cover mm-hmm. art, because Nancy's like bent over the trunk and looking through the attic, and she's even wearing red. Yeah, I don't know. So maybe I thought that was a little bit of a reference to that. Yeah. Fun Easter egg.
Just in general, whoever wrote this show is so smart. There are so many references all throughout of mm-hmm. Nancy Drew. Obviously, there's a ton, you know, historical Nancy Drew books, all of that stuff. And mm-hmm. even just, yeah, like you were saying, just stylistically, it's so reminiscent of the mystery stories and stuff mm-hmm. like that. But there's also all kinds of other references in there to like Sherlock Holmes, other like major mystery stuff. Like I was talking about Edgar Allan Poe. There's some stuff in there about Poe, like all kinds of just fun little Easter eggs. So.
And lots of references to the horror genre as well. Mm-hmm. Lots of little nods that way. So I think it does a good job with the writing for sure. Yeah,
absolutely. Okay.
I would love to talk about the art.
Yeah,
real quick for it. So I own the 4-season box set, mm-hmm. And I actually like the art that they did for the actual box better than I like the art for the season one DVD cover. Oh, I'm showing you the back of it. Sorry.
Okay. Yes.
So I'm sure you've seen this picture before. Mm-hmm. You probably watched it online for yours. So I don't know if they show the cover art or anything.
No, I don't think so.
I don't know if you can see it because there's kind of a glare. I don't super duper love the season one DVD art. Mm-hmm.
With just like a close-up of Nancy's face in this kind of landscape with the lighthouse in the background. Yeah.
Yeah, you just get this little seascape image and then Nancy's face overlaid in front mm-hmm. of it. And it's fine. I mean, don't get me wrong. Kennedy is obviously gorgeous and this is a nice photo of her. It just like... Maybe back up, Kennedy. Like, you're a little too close to the – it's just, like, really, really zoomed in on her face. Yeah. And, mm-hmm. again, nothing wrong with that. It's a nice photo. It just doesn't really tell me a lot about the season. Mm-hmm. Obviously, we can see that this girl must be Nancy, and we can see that it's probably set in a seaside town. But otherwise, mm-hmm. it doesn't really tell me anything about it. I would have liked to at least have seen, like, maybe an outfit or something, because in the rest of the rest of the DVDs here, we do see she's wearing like the outfit from the Witch Tree symbol cover, which aww. I just love. Another nice little reference like that. So like season two, it's still not super great. It's just the rest of the Drew crew and then they're inside of a magnifying glass. So at least with this, you can tell like it's a mystery. Mm-hmm. She's looking into something. We've got the magnifying glass. Season three is even better though, because you can fully tell what the outfit is. Like you can see that it's inspired by Nappy. They clearly got the like bad guy mm-hmm. ghost in the background and they're like doing a seance.
It's very horror. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then season four, she's also wearing the same outfit and then they're like looking over this grave basically and the camera's like looking
That's
up
That's very
at
Pretty
them.
Little Liars-esque.
Very much so. But yeah, so I didn't feel like it was very, it doesn't tell you a lot. It's not very descriptive. So
yeah.
I don't know if you had any additional insights to it, but.
No, I mean, well, yeah, you're right that I watched it on HBO Max. I believe that's where it's on right now. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And no, but they don't have that kind of cover art on there. I think the art that they show, well, it may be for like when you click on it from the menu or something, but whenever you go into the actual show page, I think the image that they have is the, I don't know why I'm saying, I think I can look right now. Hold on one second.
Oh, fair enough.
So on the show title, it shows the season four cover that you were showing me with them all looking over the grave. Mm-hmm. But then when I click into it, it shows me like a still from the episode. So the first one is Nancy looking at the dress, and the second one is Carson where he's about to burn the dress, and then the rest of them are just like essentially a screenshot of the episode. Cool. So we don't get a lot of that, unfortunately. But yeah,
they did a lot of really cool photo shoots with this show over the four seasons. But yeah, again, I just wish that they'd given us a little bit more detail or something to signify.
You wanted
that
some Bill Gillies in there.
I just wanted something to show me more about like what the character is going to be or what the mystery is going to be about. It's fine as it is. I just wanted a little bit more, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and especially when you think about one of my favorite things about this show is the set design. So beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
They really know what they're doing with these CW shows and the design of them. They're so good.
The Drew home is gorgeous.
It's just the call is great.
The vibes are immaculate.
Outfits, just immaculate vibes. And like the seaside town, it's so spooky and so good. The ambiance is so good. It's so good. Like it's just unmatched, unparalleled. And it's almost worth it just to watch the show just for that, just for the vibes. Like, not even worry about the plot, just watch for the vibes. I can't do that because I'm not built that way, but I can totally understand that it's worth it just for
that. It is for me. What I wouldn't give to just like wander through the wardrobe department of this show, because all the outfits are so nice. I love it.
Yeah, but so to think that that is like so good and that we can't have a little bit more of that in the you know, kind of cover art stuff that we see outside the show is a little sad. Yeah. Because you guys worked so hard on it. You know, we want to see more. But yeah.
Anyway, okay. I have rambled enough about my love for the show. Let's actually talk about it.
Do we want to come up with three words for this episode? Because I was struggling with that. The only thing that struck out to me very much was blood buckets.
Yes, that's a big one. I guess the seawater festival is also the blood bucket thing. So
maybe just buckets?
Breaking and entering?
I think just general criminal behavior because there's lots of like sneaking around, breaking into cars. There's lots of that spying, you know. So yeah, buckets, criminal behavior.
One trope that I really love in the books is when Nancy has already pretty much solved it and we don't know what she's concluded yet, but she's like, all right, guys, I have a plan.
Yes.
And then we don't really know what the plan is until they're actually enacting it and we're just seeing it in action. They do that really well in this episode, I feel like. So like, not secret plan, but like coordination maybe. Like everybody's kind of doing...
Everybody's got a job.
Exactly. Yeah.
The teamwork.
Teamwork. Yeah.
Teamwork. Okay. Yeah.
Teamwork seems good, especially because, like you said, with the seeing the cast, how well they all work together in this episode. Yeah. They all play off of each other really well.
Okay. Great. Buckets, criminal behavior, and teamwork. That's pretty good. Those are pretty good words. Okay.
Also, as I said, the show does a really good job of like ending one episode and then the next episode picks back up from that exact same scene, sometimes even that exact same shot. So I think maybe we should do just like a very quick, like, that's what you missed on Gossip Girl for episode one. Because we do literally, it's the same exact.
You said Gossip Girl, that's what you missed on Gossip Girl.
Isn't that what they say? Like, that's what you missed on Gossip Girl.
Oh, Glee.
And like,
that's what you missed on Glee.
Oh, no, Gossip Girl is just, like, previously on, and then they show you. Yeah. Well, we'll do Gossip Girl today. I've just been Gossip Girl in my mind, I guess. I need to replay Warnings at Waverly Academy.
There's too many good teen shows, you guys. Pretty Little Liars, Gossip Girl, Vampire Diaries, Buffy.
Veronica Mars.
Like, we're just, Buffy, there's just too many good ones, guys. So, our mind's just there.
CW really had a heyday, didn't they?
Oh, God, yeah. I think technically Pretty Little Liars is an ABC Family show.
We'll count it.
Gossip Girl was CW. Veronica Mars was CW. Buffy was Fox?
Was it the WB?
The WB. The WB. That's what it was.
Yeah.
The WB.
Yeah.
Oh, do you guys remember the WB?
I do. Oh, that was the heyday right there.
That's it. Okay. Sorry. Sorry. We're done. I promise. We're talking about... Anyway, let's
do a quick pilot recap so that we can jump right back into where we left off.
Perfect. Yes. So in our pilot, This is just a big summary, you guys. So Lucy Sable is haunting Horseshoe Bay, specifically Nancy, but also just in general, kind of everyone. Tiffany Hudson is dead. Maybe she was killed by a dead Lucy. We don't know. Nancy kind of has a video of it. question mark. Also, Nancy, Bess, George, and Nick are Chief McGinnis's prime suspects for Tiffany's murder. George is... slash was, still is, having an affair with Tiffany's husband, Ryan. And Nick was convicted for murder, and Tiffany was the prime witness at his trial. Also, Bess has Tiffany's wedding ring somehow. Also,
and isn't as rich as she's letting on to be, that she wants people to believe. Yeah.
And also, Carson is banging Karen, who was Nancy's mom's best friend when she was alive. Yikes. And Nancy finds Lucy Sable's bloody prom dress in her attic.
Oh, that is one thing I need to correct myself from the last episode. I did say that they were at the prom with the ceremony. It was not the prom. It was the Sea Queen ceremony. Yes. So I apologize. I got that wrong last episode. The Sea Queen ceremony is like a beauty pageant in their town. Yes. So that's what the dress is. I was wrong on that. So,
well, anyway. And I call it a prom dress, but it's also just like, you know, like a dance dress. That's why I call it a formal dress.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to start us off?
Sure. Okay. So as I said, we start exactly from where we left off in the last episode. Nancy has just gone up to the attic because she heard something a little spooky going on up there, maybe some noises. So she goes up to investigate and finds a bloody dress inside of a trunk in the attic. And we see the ghost of dead Lucy behind her. So that's where the pilot ends. And then we like open back up. Nancy has turned around now and Lucy's gone, but some lights have come on downstairs. Mm-hmm. So Carson's awake, basically. So Nancy goes downstairs and there's this fraught conversation between her and Carson where Carson tries to basically reassure Nancy that the thing with Karen didn't start until after her mom's death. So there was no, like, it wasn't...
He wasn't cheating on her.
Nothing happened. Exactly. Yeah. Nothing happened while mom was still alive. But Nancy's kind of thinking to herself, you know, if he can lie about Karen, what else is he capable of lying about? And, you know, also, why else would that dress be in the attic if Carson didn't have something that he was lying about? Mm-hmm. So she thinks that maybe he has something to do with it and actually straight out asks him. Oh, no, she doesn't actually ask him at this point. No,
that's later. Sorry.
So now it's the next morning. Nancy goes to the police station and asks to see Lucy Sable's cold case file. The police will not give it to her, but while she's there, she overhears that Ryan Hudson has successfully gotten an injunction to move Tiffany's body to a different morgue for the autopsy, somewhere in like New Hampshire or something. Mm-hmm. And this essentially means that everyone is going to have, or everyone including Ryan, so anybody like with the Hudson family or anything, could have the opportunity to mess with the results of the autopsy. And we also learned that the planned move is for 8 p.m. that night. So this prompts Nancy to focus on Tiffany rather than the Lucy side of this mystery. And then she goes to the Claw, where Nick shows up and asks her to be his date to the seawater ceremony that night. We'll learn more about the seawater ceremony later, but Nancy agrees to go with Nick, but we get this like monologue in her head. She's really hesitant to go because she thinks that he has motive to have killed Tiffany, which he definitely does. So she decides she's going to go, but just like pretend that everything is fine. Mm-hmm. So they agree to meet up at the beach that night. And then we get our little intro music. Mm-hmm. After the intro, we flash back to the Claw. Nancy, Bess, George, and Ace are all working their shift right now. And Nancy starts telling them about the autopsy. And she basically thinks that Ryan is doing this to railroad the investigation. But George, like, weirdly defends him. He's like, no, I don't think he would do something like that. Obviously, we know as the audience that they have a thing, but Nancy has not picked up on that yet.
Right.
Nancy happens to mention that she knows a forensic chemist named John Sanders. So this is definitely a reference to Tolling Bell, mm-hmm. where they have to get the chemist to help her out in that mystery. But she says this chemist owes her a favor for having solved a mystery for him previously, a perfume-related mystery, so the Tolling Bell mystery. And so she's going to contact him and ask if he can perform a tox screen on Tiffany if they can get a sample of her blood.
Mm.
So that means to get a sample of her blood, she's got to get to the body somehow, which means she's got to break into the morgue. So at this point, she goes to the morgue and she starts, she's just like in the bushes with tiny binoculars, like staking out the place.
I love Nancy's tiny binoculars. Maybe that should have been one of our three words, because she uses them multiple times throughout the course of the episode. Just these little tiny ones. So funny.
Excellent. And she's also like telling us as well, she's like, standard breaking and entering, I've been doing these since I was 10, and like, this is gonna be so easy. But then she realizes it's not like a key, it's like a card swipe thing, so this is gonna be a little bit more difficult to break in than she thought. But at this point, she sees the coroner actually leave, and he tucks his like ID swipe card into his car visor when he's on his way out. And he's also talking on the phone to somebody about how he's going to be attending the seawater ceremony that night. So Nancy starts to hatch her plan.
Right.
You want to take it from here?
Sure. So while she's watching the coroner kind of get into his car and thinking about this, she sees the ghost of dead Lucy. Obviously, Nancy doesn't, at this point, she has not fully accepted the fact that she is being visited by a ghost. So she doesn't really know what it is that she's seeing, but it kind of like prompts her to like move closer, and she does. And then she's like standing under a tree. Oh God, this makes, I hate this so much. The ghost arm, I guess, of dead Lucy like reaches down from the tree and like grabs her by the shoulder. No. Big nope. From me. Also, I think we need to talk about this haunting a little bit more in depth when we're done with this summary too, because I find this very interesting.
The hauntings get less intense as the season goes on, I will say. So
interesting.
If you're like me and this is like a little too much at the start, it does get better with the jump scares. It's not as constant as it is in the first two episodes.
Good to know. Yeah. So that happens. And then Nancy goes to regroup kind of with Bess, George, and Ace back at the Claw. And so she asks for their help in breaking into the morgue, tells them her plan that since the coroner is going to be attending the seawater ceremony tonight, they can steal his key card then at the ceremony and break into the morgue right after, and then hopefully be out by 9 p.m. But remember, the van's coming at 8 p.m., so they're going to have to figure out some way to deal with the van. Maybe they can try to cancel it somehow by stealing Ryan's cell phone and calling whoever this new coroner person is and basically just saying, oh, hey, sorry, we can't do tonight, right? So they're going to have to figure out some way to get that cell phone from Ryan. And in fact, George says that she happens to know that he jogs nearby, at lunchtime. Like, that's part of his routine. So they say, oh, great, George, why don't you go steal his cell phone for us? And George is like, right, awesome, sure. It's very awkward, right? Because George is sleeping with him and she doesn't want to do this, but she does agree to. So meanwhile, Nancy goes to Nick's garage to get this tool that she's going to need to break into the coroner's car. And side note, while she's there, we kind of see, because Nick currently has Nancy's mom's car in his garage because he told her that he would try to get it working for her. It's a blue convertible, everyone.
Yes.
Just want to bring that up. I love that.
So iconic.
So great. So we see that, and then she asks him for the tool to break into a locked car. And he does kind of try to feel around to ask her, like, hey, what do you need this for, right? But she says, you know what, I'm just going to tell you, I'm just trying to figure out how Tiffany died, but I'm not going to give you any more details, basically because I don't want to get you in trouble because of your criminal record, right? And Nick believes this, but I mean, I think we as the audience know that the reason she doesn't want to include him on this plan is because she suspects him of killing Tiffany. Mm-hmm. So, right. Oh, so awkward. Then we get a scene of George going to get Ryan's phone, going to steal it. She goes up to his car, which is just parked, I guess, out here in the woods or whatever, with the windows rolled down. Who does that? Who goes off jogging and leaves the windows of their car? They're very expensive. I think it's a Mercedes or something, like with the windows rolled down. Unreal. So she just is able to just like yoink his cell phone out of his car. Well, also, he doesn't run with his cell phone. I'm sorry. This is such a man thing to do. If you were a woman not running with your cell phone, like, that's insane, right?
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I know it's tough to run with, like, things to hold, but you don't have a way to call 911 in case you're attacked? Like, come on.
Right.
You're running in the woods, dude. Sorry.
Alone. Yeah.
Also, this is like, I mean, I know it hasn't really gotten there yet, but this is murder central that we live in, okay? Like,
right,
we need to take some precautions. You're basically on a hellmouth. Figure it out.
Right.
Anyway, so she just yoinks his cell phone out of his car. And, but then Ryan just, like, immediately runs up to her. Like, I guess he was just right there. So George has to pretend that she was actually out here looking for him. But she does actually have a serious question to ask him. She asks him about him, you know, getting this injunction to move Tiffany's body and why he's done that, you know. And he says that, quote unquote, people like to come after families like his. Tiffany was heavily medicated. So he doesn't want people to find that out. He doesn't want to risk that getting out to people and I guess them using that somehow against his family and or just like spoiling Tiffany's memory and reputation somehow. Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Maybe we believe it. George certainly does believe this and clearly seems to be kind of affected by this and feels bad, right, for not trusting him because this is the guy that she has a relationship. So she ends up pretending that he dropped his cell phone and just like picks it up off the ground, right? She actually pulled it from her pocket and just hands it to him and says, oh, you dropped this, right? So she doesn't, yeah, because she doesn't want to steal it from him because she feels bad. Well, they kiss and she leaves. And then we see that actually the whole time, Nancy was watching this interaction from the trees with her little binoculars. So funny. So yeah, so now Nancy knows about George and Ryan.
So later we see that Ryan is just like out and about in town and runs into Carson, and he goes up to Carson and asks him if he can hire him as his lawyer. And Carson's like, what do you need a lawyer for if you're innocent? Mm-hmm. That's, you know, a little suspicious there. And he says, oh, no, you are so liked in this town that if I hire you, it will like help my public image and people will have a better image of me if I'm like associated with you. Sure. Sucks. So, and Carson's like, actually, I promised my late wife that I would never work for another Hudson. So fat chance, right? We flash back to the Claw and it's just Nancy and George there right now. And Nancy's telling George that she saw her helping Ryan and knows that she's sleeping with him. So she kind of confronts George and is like, okay, either you had motive to kill Tiffany or you were doing this to protect Ryan, or both, mm-hmm. possibly. So what is it? And this is just like sparks an argument between the two of them. And it brings up we get a glimpse at some past drama here. So George says, this is just like high school with your friends calling me a slut and then laughing at me. And then Nancy's like, oh, I never said any of those things mm-hmm. about you. And George is like, but you laughed about it, didn't you? And yeah, so the, yeah, I forgot about that. That they would wipe her chair off when she would stand horrible. Up. Gross. Yeah. So Nancy tries to brush it off and she's like, my friends were idiots back then. And George is like, yeah, but they were still your friends. And I seem to remember that they dropped you like a hot potato the second that you became the girl with the sick mom. Mm. So what does that say about you and your friends? So it's a very like tense situation here. But just at this moment, Ace and Bess come into the room at this point and they're like, hey guys, what's going on? And Nancy has the perfect opportunity here to tell them what George has been up to. Right. But after this, she decides that she's going to keep George's secret a secret and says like, you know, she's just kind of vague. She's like, you know, the plan is off. We got to find some other thing to do instead. So Ace suggests, hey, we can still try to delay things if we can, like, stop the van somehow. So Bess and I will get to work on that. We'll come up with a plan for, like, how to stop the van from getting to the morgue, because they say something about how there's only one road in and out of that area. So it should be pretty easy if they're able to set up some sort of blockade or something. So they say, we'll work on that. And Nancy, you go and steal the key card to break into the morgue so we can actually get into the building. So she goes to meet Nick at the Seawater Festival, and we get this narration from Nancy that explains what the Seawater Festival is. So she tells us that this is a annual thing that Horseshoe Bay holds the ceremony once a year on the last day of the summer festival. Basically, you fill a bucket with seawater, you go down to the beach, fill it with seawater, and then you take it home, you leave it outside your door overnight, and then at midnight, you go outside, you kick it over, and if there is seawater still inside your bucket, you're fine. But if your bucket has turned to blood, or the water in the bucket has turned to blood, then you are marked to die sometime in the next year. Very spooky. This town has so many different weird rituals like this. It's like every other week they have some sort of like haunted something. Wouldn't that be so fun this to like so, go to all these like, fun town events?
Witchcraft coded too. Like just like the fact that they have a summer festival and that part of it is this very pagan like ritual. I'm like gathering seawater.
Wait till season 3 and 4.
I love it. Love it.
They get way, they like really get into that in season 3 and 4 with the rituals and the witchcraft and the like, oh, we got to have the Beltane Festival and all these new moon festivals. And oh, yeah, everything that they do has to be on like a waning moon or something. You know, it has to, like, they pay close attention to the moon cycle.
Okay.
Anyway, they're all at the seawater ceremony and Ryan shows up and he's clearly there to like put on a good face for the public. Like he is out there shaking hands, like he's hamming it up with the like
buying grieving bucket from a kid to
he is trying to get people to feel sorry for him basically. And people are literally lining up to offer his condolences. So George gets in line because she's going to confront him and is like, how dare you like pretend to be so sad about Tiffany when you didn't even like care about her and you're, you know, doing all this other stuff. But he pretends not to know George when she reaches him in line. Oh, I think she was going to warn him as well about
I don't know if she was going to like explicitly call him out, but she clearly was feeling like angry and frustrated at him being there. And so just wanted to kind of like confront him a little bit. I don't know if she was going to like make a big scene or anything, but it was
tell him off. But then we flash back to Nancy and she's just kind of, you know, she's just kind of standing there hanging out, but she sees the coroner leave. Oh, no, sorry. She sees the coroner arriving to the ceremony. So she's like, oh, perfect timing. Now that he's like busy with his bucket or whatever, I'm going to ditch Nick and go break into his car. So she does. She gets the like little tool or whatever that Nick gave her. So she goes over. She like jimmies the window open and gets his card out of the visor where he'd left it. And as she's leaving, she like turns around to walk away from the car. And on the ground, there's like blood dripping, like running down the it's like a gravel parking lot or whatever. And she sees it just like running down by her shoes. And she's like, oh, that's really weird. Where is that blood coming from? So she like looks around a little bit. And as she looks up, she sees behind her in the car reflection window, dead Lucy. And of course they like have like a scream or whatever, like Lucy screams. So it's like this jump scare. And then Nancy like startles a little bit and she looks back down. The blood is just gone. So it wasn't real blood. Dead Lucy's been haunting her. So now she's all ready to break into the morgue. You want to take it from here?
Sure. So Nancy decides to wear her signature black beanie. Love that for her. And gets to the morgue and breaks in successfully with the key card. And she's like walking down the hallway trying to like dodge the security cameras. It's very fun. Quite a fun scene. So Nancy is doing that while Bess and Ace basically just sit on the road that's on the way to the morgue. And they let the air out of their tire and just essentially create car trouble for them so that they can like flag down the van when it comes and say like, hey, we're stranded, can you help us, right? It comes by and Bess flags it down and we meet its driver, Lisbeth. And Lisbeth! Lisbeth is hot and knows cars, so she offers to help them change their tire. So,
thank you, Lisbeth, our hero, come to rescue us.
So she starts to work on that, and Bess and Ace realize that Lisbeth is, like, so good with cars that she's like, this is going to take 5 minutes. Like, this is not enough time. Like, we need to stall, like, more. So Ace ends up doing something to the engine. I don't know if he cut something or something to make it, like, start smoking. And so they get Lisbeth to look under the hood. And she and Bess have, like, the loveliest, cutest, flirtiest interaction ever. Mm-hmm. She's, like, working under the hood. And she's like, can you hold this right here? And Bess is like, oh, right here. And she's like, yeah, let me take your hand and put it on the right spot. I feel that. Oh, you feel that? Oh, yeah. just light pressure. It's very fun.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
And you can also see, like, Ace, like, standing to the side and just kind of, like, noticing this happening, being a little surprised, being like, Bess, like, you know, like.
You can see him, like, oh, I understand why, like, my hitting on her was not working so well at first. Yeah.
Very funny.
I will say as well, if you have to pay attention to him, but Ace is so freaking funny. Yes. A lot of times he will just say something kind of under his breath. So again, you have to kind of just, like, pay attention and wait for what he's going to say, but he will say the funniest thing. I love Ace in the first season. He's so funny. Anyway, I love Ace in the whole the whole series, to be clear, but he's especially funny in the first season.
Yeah, he's a really good choice to add him in as a character. I think it really helps balance out a lot of the feminine energy that we get between Nancy, Bess, and George.
You need a Hardy boy sometimes.
Absolutely. Absolutely, you do.
Yeah.
So they're doing that. They're distracting Lisbeth while Nancy is back at the morgue. She has to look at a lot of dead bodies. It's very uncomfortable. And then eventually she finds Tiffany. She takes a sample of blood from Tiffany's body. And, like, it's just the grossest and freakiest scene. It's, like, dark. It's cold. You can, like, see Nancy's breath, right? Because this is a morgue. So I guess the room is maybe slightly refrigerated or something. And there's all these dead bodies around. And Nancy has to take a syringe and put it in behind the ear and draw. It gives me the heebies. And then, so she does that. She gets the blood sample. But then she, like, hallucinates seeing a body on a slab.
Like under the cloth or whatever, the drape.
Yes. But it's clearly not there. Like, she looks away, she looks back, and it's gone. But then a door nearby, like, slowly creaks open on its own. So horrifying. But so Nancy decides to just go into this room that has just opened. I don't know why you wouldn't be running in the opposite direction, but I guess because it's Nancy Drew, she ain't scared of no ghost. So
she has to know what's behind that door.
So she goes in and realizes that this is the tissue sample room. So this is essentially where they keep tissue samples from, like, former cases, right? Maybe cold cases, whatever. So she finds this room, and what do you know? Inside this room, there is a box with tissue samples from Lucy Sable. So Nancy opens this box and takes the stuff inside. It ends up being a blood sample and a hair sample from, like, some blood on the rocks and the crown that she was wearing. But then a camera in the corner spots her. And an alarm starts sounding. So she has to, like, book it out of there. So she, like, runs through the hallway, tries to get out the back door that she came through, but it's, like, locked now and won't open. I guess the building goes on some sort of lockdown, which, like, this is some high security for some kind of, like, county morgue out in the middle of nowhere. But she's stuck. Very luckily, though, George shows up, and Nancy is able to pass the evidence out to her when they break there's, like, a little tiny window in this door, so they break that tiny window and pass the evidence out so George can take that. And Nancy has to stay there and get caught and get arrested.
Awesome. So we flash back to the Claw. Ace and Bess have finished up their car trouble or whatever, and they're back waiting on Nancy now. And they start having a little conversation about Lisbeth. And Ace is like, hey, that Lisbeth, huh? She seemed really great. And Bess is like, oh, yeah, she was great, but I don't know. I'm not really dating lately. Like, I don't really allow myself to drop anchor anywhere. I haven't been able to, like, form close attachments with anyone, guys or girls. And Ace is like, hey, I could be your anchor. I could be, like, your platonic anchor. Like, no pressure. I know I, like, made it very clear at the beginning that I had a crush on you, but now that I know that you're not into me, I'm, you know, I respect that. I'll be your platonic anchor. Yay. Call that a platanker. They're platankers for the rest of the season. I love it. I love it. Yes. But then at this moment, George starts running in and she's like, so Nancy got arrested and I have a bunch of dead people's parties in my pocket. So I got to do something with this. She goes and she puts them in the fridge. Meanwhile, we flash to Nancy. She is at the police station getting booked by Karen. Of course, this is just like a tiny little police station. Like literally it's one room with a bunch of desks set up. And then McGinnis has his own office next to it. And Karen's desk is just like in the middle of this room. And Nancy's just in a chair next to her desk. And this is super awkward, obviously, because Karen is like not hiding her disappointment in Nancy for having done this. She tries to have her like a little heart to heart with her and is like, you need to stop doing this kind of thing. And Nancy's like, no, you can't tell me nothing because you are like, you have this secret with Carson and like, don't try to get on my good side, basically. But then she's like, ooh, if I can just get Karen away from her desk, there's nobody else around right now. I can try to look at the police records to see if the police know more about this case than I do. So she asks Karen for some coffee. Karen falls for it and takes, you know, a 20-minute break to go make coffee. Not really 20 minutes, but Nancy's able to like get up and then rifle through the computer while she's gone. She looks for the latest information on Tiffany that she has on her computer and sees that the latest thing that they have is Tiffany's phone record. So it's actually like screenshots of all of her text messages. And she sees that the last text message Tiffany sent was a number that was just, it wasn't a save contact. So we just have the number. And it just says package in car. Mm-hmm. Very suspicious. So Nancy managed just to like, she's handcuffed. So she grabs a marker off of Karen's desk and like flips up the inside of her shirt and writes down the number so that smart. Tiffany had been texting on the inside of her shirt. Very smart. And then flips it back down so you can't see it. And then moves back to the chair that she was sitting in. And then Karen comes back with the coffee. Then Carson shows up to bail her out and tries to tell her that this girl detective stuff isn't cute anymore. You are way too old to be like breaking into morgues without any like thought to consequence or anything like that. And she's like, I'm just trying to find out the truth. But Carson tells her, you just need to let the cops like do their job. They are perfectly capable of solving this mystery. Also, I know that you broke into my home office at the house because there was like, Ned's records were not where they were supposed to be. So I know you've been looking at that. And Nancy tells him that she can't trust anything he says because he's been keeping secrets from her. So Carson tells her, he's like, you know, client confidentiality is a whole thing. So I can't actually tell you anything about Nick's case or any of the work that I did for Nick. But I'm telling you, hypothetically, if someone were in a situation where they were about to go to jail and then this witness were to like come in and give their side of the story, if it were such a big witness as Tiffany definitely would have been, this person would have testified from behind a screen. So hypothetically, if Nick had ever been in a situation like this, he wouldn't have ever known that it was Tiffany testifying against him. So essentially, Carson is telling us Nick had no idea who Tiffany was. He knew that there was somebody testifying against him. He just had no idea that it was Tiffany. So Nancy's like, well, if that's true, then why were you telling me to stay away from Nick? And he's like, I just wanted you to focus on getting your life back on track, not focusing on boys and like dating somebody who's living here. You need to be focusing on your future. So Nancy decides this must be a great time to ask him about the dress in the attic since he seems to be so, you know, in such like an open sharing mood right now. And he puts, The actor's so good. Like, you can tell so easily that he's lied. Just the way, like, his inflection of everything, the way he looks at Nancy. Oh, this is so good. And he's like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. That old dress, that was a Halloween prank. I used to, like, joke around with your mom because, like, you know, she loves Halloween. So I bought that dress at, like, a thrift store 30 years ago. And I threw some, like, food dye on it to make it look like blood. And then I would, like, hide it in the house for your mom to find it around Halloween so that it was, like, this little prank that we played on each other, right? And Nancy does not buy it. She's like, no, no, no. If that were the case, why would you have, like, put it in the trunk in the backyard and have dug it up when I was young? And because we have a flashback scene to where when Nancy's little, she remembers seeing her parents burying it and then unburying it later, which is very suspicious. So she confronts him about that. And he's like, oh, no, no, we only unburied it because that we realized that that's where your great grandmother had hid her valuables. And Nancy's like, what valuables? And he's like, oh, some teacups and some really nice steak knives. Okay, great. And Nancy just believes this. Mm-hmm. And then also we learn that Carson has bailed Nancy out and he was only able to do so because he got money from agreeing to take on Ryan's case. So now he is actually working for the Hudson's.
Can I just say, okay, like honestly, like sometimes I can find the actor who plays Carson to be like a little bit stiff and a little bit wooden, but he acts this lie of the dress, the bloody dress, so well.
Oh yeah,
it is insane. And it is such a hard thing to do, is like somehow portray like the truth of the text, right, but also portray it in a way that it looks like you're lying about what you're saying,
right?
That's so hard to do, and he does it so well.
Oh yeah,
I love it. I love it. Anyway,
oh, agreed. Yeah, anyway. You take it from here.
Sure. So yeah, so he bails Nancy out of jail. And I think it's really, there's a really interesting line that I want to talk about a little bit later, too. At the end of this scene, he says, as your lawyer, I'm willing to do anything to protect you. I'm sorry, let's just talk about it now. Is he saying as your lawyer, not as your father?
That's interesting. There was a couple points earlier in the episode where he would say something to her and she would say, like, are you saying that as my dad or as my lawyer? Yeah. And so I don't know if this is just a callback to that, but it is interesting word choice for sure.
Well, I just also don't understand, like, if I were Carson and there had been that back and forth, or I'm the writers or whatever, and I'm writing this line, why you wouldn't say as your lawyer and as your father, I would do anything to protect you.
Yeah.
You know, because I feel like that's a little bit more. This feels cold. It feels like he's still trying to, like, distance himself from her, like, emotionally. And I just think, like, at this point, after they've had this, you know, semi-honest, like, heart-to-heart moment, it would have been a nice point for him to be like, no, I am your father, Nancy. You know what I mean? Like, I want to take care of you because I'm your dad, you know? Whatever.
I know she rejects him sort of for that earlier in the episode, but not a reason for him to stay butthurt about it, you know, like be the dad. It's fine.
Anyway, so once out of jail, Nancy goes back to the claw. She goes to collect the evidence that she gave to George, and she apologizes to George finally for not stopping her friends from bullying her in high school. And George thanks her for not outing her relationship with Ryan to Bess and George, right? And also, George says now she's kind of realized after the seawater ceremony thing where she went up to, like, talk to Ryan and he pretended to not know who she was. She realizes that Ryan still wants to keep their relationship a secret, even though, obviously, his wife is no longer in the picture. So George is really, like, upset by that and kind of realizes that, you know, he still doesn't want to be open about their relationship. And she even says it's a really sad moment. She says he doesn't think she's the kind of girl to be in public with. Like, she's a secret and, like, he's ashamed of her. And it's really sad.
I will say this is one of the things from the books that they could have maybe not stuck so closely with. In the books, we do have way too many instances where Nancy, Bess, and or George are all targeted by way older men who are not appropriate for them. And the show does later they make an attempt to address it and call it out as being wrong and bad and unhealthy for them, but not quite as much as they maybe should. And so that's something that I definitely could have seen improved upon or just left out entirely.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's so horrible too, because like we know at this point, like obviously we know that Ryan is the man that she was seeing while she was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
So like presumably he was still married at that
time. Oh, yeah.
Like she was fully seeing an older adult married man mm-hmm. while she was like a teenager.
They specify that they got caught junior year, but we don't know. I mean, this is right. probably like 16 years old. Could have even been earlier than that, that things started mm-hmm. between them. So it's, ugh.
And I mean, they do portray Ryan as being a little bit younger. I think he's probably in his 20s as opposed to, I mean, maybe he could be 30, but he's not ancient, you know what I mean? But it's still a very inappropriate and way too big of an age gap. And it's gross, you know?
They do actually say he's 36 or 37.
No!
Yeah.
No! No! Sorry. I just sunk underneath my desk in the ick of that. I thought, no way. I thought he was like 27.
No. Well, because I did my little timeline where I went through and I like made notes of every time they mentioned a date in the show. Tiffany was born in 1991. So what is she? She was 28, but Nancy's 19 and Ryan has to be 36, 37-ish.
Oh, you're right. Mm-hmm. Well, they even in the show, in like this episode, maybe it's not this episode, but in a couple episodes where they go back. I mean, it's obvious he went to school with Lucy. Right. So like he's the same age as Lucy. And that happened a full 18 years ago. So like, yeah, he's got to be 18 years older than mm-hmm. George.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And later in the show, they do change Ryan's character a lot. They make him lovable goofball guy.
No, I'm sorry. You can't do that.
I like how that character contributes to the dynamic of the show that makes it fun, but to have that change from a previously unredeemable character.
Yes.
I
hate this. I hate it when media tries to take this clear crime that has occurred or mm-hmm. something egregious that someone has done and just be like, well, it's okay. We still love him. Like, no, mm-hmm. no. Like, I'm sorry. In real life, yes, I know that sometimes like, things are gray and that we have to move forward in some way or another. Mm-hmm. And I guess I don't think that it's just horrible that a show would want to like address that. But I do not think that it is the right place for that kind of work. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Like, I don't think a TV show should be taking on, let's figure out how we can address, at least not this TV show, figuring out how we can address moving forward with someone who has, you know, like committed statutory rape.
Right.
Like, I think like, let's draw a line and be like, okay, that's not appropriate. We don't like that character anymore because that's bad. So mm-hmm. let's do something else. You know, like,
yeah.
We don't need to try to be like, well, he's changed. No, let's not. Let's just not and say we never did. Like, oh.
The show does, to be fair, it does try to take on more difficult topics, especially as they pertain to teenagers. Mm-hmm. And we do learn things about Ryan later that maybe will help viewers give like maybe a little bit more empathy to him, but it doesn't make up for this specifically. Like, there's nothing mm-hmm. that we could learn about Ryan that would make this okay, not by any means. And we do, not to spoil anything, but in the season finale of season one, we do have George confront Ryan for what he's done to her and how it's affected her mental health. But it is honestly a very brief scene and it's not enough. And mm-hmm. then from there, we just go back to like, not back to, but we just move on to this dynamic where George and Ryan are just fine. And there's no like awkwardness between them. There's no like George not wanting to be around when Ryan's hanging out. Like they just don't do enough to say like, this is wrong. And like, we clearly get that it's wrong, but they just, we don't, do enough to show mm-hmm. that this isn't healthy. And then the show doesn't do a great job of not replicating that later on. We do see a lot of older men have a lot of interest mm-hmm. in Nancy. And mm-hmm. Nancy even like goes on dates with yeah. and sleeps with these older men. Mm-hmm. And that's never really addressed. We only mm-hmm. ever see George calling out Ryan like one or two times and that's it.
No, that's, I don't like that. Yeah, I mean, like, not there's, at all. I think there is one appropriate way to deal with like that kind of like someone who has like transgressed in that way in mm-hmm. a TV show and keep them in the TV show, right? It's to like have the moments where they are confronted, mm-hmm. where we call out their behavior as being wrong, and then they take part in a separate storyline mm-hmm. in the show. You know what I mean? Whereas like now our character, whoever was affected by that, lives a life separately from that person.
Right.
And that person, they can have whatever kind of personal redemption arc that they want, but that redemption arc shouldn't really involve that person who right. they've wronged. At least not maybe until like a season or two.
Way later.
Like later. Yeah. You know? Like, because mm-hmm. that's a healthy process, right? It is not healthy to like have a relationship with an older man, confront him, and then just be buddies after right. after that. That's not.
It's so bizarre. And I agree with you, what you said. That would have been way better. We either needed to do exactly that or just not have this storyline in the mm-hmm. first place mm-hmm. or write Ryan off as being mm-hmm. a freaking pedophile and mm-hmm. somebody we just don't really associate with, or maybe, you know,
right.
maybe he has other traits yeah. to him. Yeah.
Well, I think also like there could be some value in like having him leave the show for a certain amount of time mm-hmm. and then come back later. Like we don't have to do work on screen to redeem him right. necessarily if we don't want to spend the time doing that, but like we need time. We can't just immediately pretend like everything is okay mm-hmm. even after airing out grievances. It's still not, that's not enough for that kind of crime.
Because he is like really almost borderline evil, statutory rape, doesn't really care that he like is just not a pleasant person, that he's mm-hmm. having this horrible affair, like cheating mm-hmm. on his wife. We go from that, and then Nancy finds some additional information out about him, and then boom, he's goofball funny guy. It's like, oh, I don't like that arc. It doesn't fit. And again, yeah. I like the goofball funny character. I think he's a mm-hmm. fun addition mm-hmm. to the show. I think the dynamic works really well, but how we got there doesn't make yeah. me very comfortable. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyway,
sorry. So, yeah, so basically everything is forgiven between George and Nancy, and they take the evidence that George has, they package it up to send to Nancy's scientist contact friend for all the testing. Afterwards, Nancy goes to meet up with Nick. He has finished her mom's car.
Yay! Oh, this is such a nice scene.
I know. And now Nancy gets her blue convertible to drive around in. Isn't it so exciting? And then we get, this is the wrap-up of our episode, we get kind of what I like to call the end of the episode, more mysteries to keep us in suspense scenes.
Our cliffhangers, our end of chapter cliffhangers.
There we go, yes. So we see kind of like a bunch of things in like quick succession, and we kind of flash quickly in between multiple different scenes. So I'm going to summarize those scenes now. So we see Ace get a text from a contact, he's named Weed Guy, telling him to share any results they get from the talk tests that they're running on Tiffany's body. So that's weird. It definitely seems like Ace is hiding something, right? Clearly this is not a weed guy, as he's labeled in his phone contact, and who would be wanting to know that kind of information?
You mean his dealer doesn't have high interest in the outcome of Tiffany's murder investigation?
I mean, unless his weed guy's so somebody involved, I don't know. So that's interesting. Then we see Nick and Nancy hooking up, and Nick goes to leave to kick over the bucket outside because it's midnight now, so he's going to see if his seawater is still seawater or if it's blood. And so while he's gone, Nancy takes this opportunity to call the number that she has written on the underside of her shirt, right? She wants to see who the phone or who has the phone that Tiffany last texted. Then we see a scene where Carson is burning the bloody dress that we found in the attic.
Why would you burn a prank? A little prank prop?
It almost seems like he was lying.
Huh.
And then we see a little montage of everybody kicking over their buckets outside at midnight. Everyone is in the clear with water still in their buckets until George goes outside, kicks over her bucket, and we see blood running down her front steps. Ah. Oh, no, George! Then Nick returns to Nancy in bed, and so Nancy has to basically hang up her phone before it actually connects to anybody or voicemail or whatever. But as we see that, as we see her hang up the phone, we obviously Nancy doesn't see this. But we as the audience see that a cell phone in Nick's garage lights up with one missed call.
Oh, so maybe Nick knows more than he's letting on.
So good. So good.
And y'all, of course, episode 3 picks back up from this same scene too. So we find out about that missed call right away. Oh, it's great. It's great. Anyway.
Oh, what a good episode. Okay. I want to talk about this haunting. I want to talk about this Lucy yes. Sable haunting. One, like you were saying, yes, it is super intense. Very, very intense. But also, I think it's so interesting the way that they choose to make it such a physical haunting. Mm-hmm. Like, Nancy gets grabbed. Nancy, there's a lot of hallucinating, which I tend to prefer. I think in my hauntings, I like the hallucination trope, right? Because it's like, it becomes very personal, right? You're like, am mm-hmm. I seeing things? But the being grabbed part, I feel like a tactile hallucination is a big mm-hmm. step up from a visual hallucination.
Oh, yeah.
And so that, I don't know how I feel about that. Because I think, like, this is a personal thing. I know. This is very much a personal thing. But I like the ambiguity when we don't know if hauntings are real or if they are imagined. Because I think that that is more true to real life. And I think that we get a lot of more interesting character development when that's the case, when someone doesn't know if they're being haunted or if they are being crazy. And obviously, I know that this show is supernatural and becomes very supernatural. And yes, we know that it is real. But I do think that we're in episode 2. Like, we could take a little bit more time to get to that. And especially when it comes to, like, what I know the arc of a CW is like, we have to keep ramping up, right? Like, our threats have to continue to become greater and greater and greater. In my opinion, I don't think Nancy should know that she's being haunted at least until the end of the season. You know what I mean? Like,
maybe. I don't know. But see, Lucy's also not necessarily like the evil that needs to ramp up, you know?
No,
so.
No, I know. I know. I don't hate
it. We don't know that yet as the viewer, but.
I just think that at this point in the episode, I think we could, like you were saying, I don't think we need full on tactile, like nobody needs to be getting grabbed, I think, right. At this point. But I will say another very interesting part of the haunting that I picked up on is that whenever Nancy sees the ghost of Lucy, it is always in a reflection.
Oh, yeah.
I think almost always. I just think that's such a nice little symbolic thing in there. And I love that. I love that so much. If any of you picked up on that. So
I absolutely love when Nancy Drew, a game, book, whatever, does this where we feel like we're being haunted, but they leave it a little bit mm-hmm. open because it lets Nancy still be skeptical of mm-hmm. it and still look into the actual mystery side of things. I did just realize something, though, with the haunting. Hmm. Nancy says, I don't know if it's this episode or the pilot or later in the season, at some point she says, Lucy starts haunting me after Tiffany's murder. But that's not quite true, because in the pilot, you remember there's the scene at the graves where yes. Nancy's with her former friends yeah. and the former boyfriend, and he like jumps up and scares her mm-hmm. and they're all like, oh, haha, let's go, Nancy. But Nancy's still like staring off into the distance because she sees the ghost of Lucy mm-hmm. just kind of off in the distance. Yeah. And she's like staring, and then she like turns and looks back, and then Lucy's gone. So Lucy has been haunting, because that was at least a year ago.
Yeah, but uh-huh. that, I think they code that as being part of the ritual of, because of Nancy is sea queen, right? And so I think what the lore is, what the legend is that if you go, you're supposed to go put your crown on the grave, And then when Lucy will appear. And Lucy will appear to you. But it's, yeah.
Okay, so it was just that one instance because Nancy had basically called to her.
But that is really interesting. That is clever. But that is really interesting because I think it's interesting to think of like that as the moment where everything kicks off instead of Tiffany's murder. Because even if it was part of the, you know, the Sea Queen ritual, Nancy being named Sea Queen in the same, you know, way that Lucy was, and her essentially like starting this cycle all over again, right? I think that's interesting.
Maybe that scene was more to just show us that Lucy is capable of haunting, and then she doesn't actually target Nancy specifically, beyond having been called by Nancy as the new Sea Queen at the beginning. She only shows up specifically after the Tiffany murder, and that's why the haunting kind of kicks off from there. Okay, that makes more sense. All right.
Yeah. Okay, what else?
I've already ranted about my inappropriate age difference thing so
much. I
know.
I feel like we've gone through it. let's see.
I just, like you said, again, I just love the cast so much. Yeah. Ace is hilarious. Bess is fantastic. Mm-hmm. George plays her role really well. Nick is great.
Is he? Do we like Nick?
Well... I meant the actor.
Oh, yeah.
He plays the role of Nick very well. Mm-hmm. Nick at this point is...
not likable.
Too eager to date Nancy, yes. I think.
Yeah, he has big simp vibes. Yeah.
Not that there's anything wrong with wanting to date Nancy, because everybody
Who
does.
Wouldn't?
She's a wonderful person, right? But he just... he hasn't done anything egregious yet, and I don't want to be like, oh, he's so controlling, but there are points where he gets to be controlling.
Well, nobody likes somebody who's desperate, and I think that's
a good way to put it.
Yeah, I think his actions can sometimes tend toward desperation. And I mean, I guess I can understand that he's in a bad, you know, position. Like he doesn't have a whole lot of good options for his life, right? But I think when you rely too much on other people to fulfill your own emotional needs, it's just not, I don't know, just not great choices. Yeah. So, yeah.
And I don't want to vilify him by any means, but I do think that he's a little bit too nice guy at the start. And I think that the actor does a very, very good job of walking that line very finely. He plays it very well. So I like how well he plays Nick, even if sometimes the character of Nick is still just how I feel about Ned in general. Nancy can do better.
It's true. It's true. Because I think, you know, like as an actor, it can be really challenging when you're playing a character who sometimes slash maybe a lot of the time isn't very likable, like and not in the way that a villain isn't likable, right? But in the way that like a friend isn't likable.
He just kind of gets in the way of Nancy sometimes. Mm-hmm. Like, I totally understand where he's coming from of wanting Nancy to be more open with him and just be a little bit more, I don't know, just get emotionally more close to him. And she's not really willing to do that. Mm-hmm. But she makes it very clear that that's not what he wants. And he's still just like, why won't you tell me? And like, dude, chill out. She will tell you when she's ready.
Like, or not. And like,
or not.
Get over
it's not
it,
your business.
You know, like, yeah. Yeah. No, that's so, yeah. And I'm glad you said that because it is so much like the Ned Nickerson of the books. Because we love to hate him. You know what I mean? Like he can be so just like icky feeling. And so to like be able to portray that well while still like while making it understandable, right? While making it relatable, while making people be able to be like, well, I can see why he would do that or why he would act that way. That's great. Mm-hmm. That's great work. It's great work.
I like him better after. I like the character better. Not the actor. The actor's great the whole time. Yeah. But I like the character better after he and Nancy break up.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a spoiler. But yeah.
I like Ned better in the books when he and Nancy are broken up.
Because he's fine on his own. It's just within the dynamic. I just don't think it works very well. And all of those complaints go away when he's not any longer trying to get Nancy to open up to him or do what he wants her to do in the context of their relationship.
He has personal work to do that does not need to be done in the context of a relationship.
Yes.
Yes.
Although he does get into another relationship very quickly after this, but that's not the point.
Anyway. Yeah. I do want to say too, I cannot describe to you how much I love the Bess character.
I love her so much.
I mean, you know that we love Bess just in general. Hashtag Team Bess. We're all about Bess anyway. But the way that they portray Bess in this is honestly maybe one of the best representations of Bess, I think, that exists. For me, so like out of the books, out of any TV show, out of any movie, like this Bess is maybe my favorite Bess.
Yeah.
Just, she's so funny. She's so funny. So sharp. You can see that she plays up, like she acts stupid, even though she's actually really intelligent. You can see all the things that she puts on.
She knows exactly what she's doing. She's two steps ahead at all times.
She does. And she's so charming and so lovable and so sweet and kind. And the way that she loves the supernatural and she just takes to it and like really like plays it up, but at the same time is like freaked out. And she's so animated and excited.
She gets so excited so easily. It's so sweet. I love it.
So sweet. And the way that she loves fashion and clothes. We get all of these like classic Bess highlights, but we also get such a freshness to the character in this show that I think a lot of the times portrayals of Bess can feel just like really rote or really
stereotypical,
one dimensional. This is just so lovely and so exciting and so it's so great, just so great. So I love Bess so much, and all the characters, but especially Bess, and especially always Bess. Yeah, that's okay. I think just in general, that's the reason why I do enjoy watching this show so much. I said at the beginning, and I'll say it again, I think that the characters, they really, really got, they really understood. And even though I know that we lose some of that a little bit as we go on, I don't think we ever lose it to the point where it's not enjoyable. You know what I mean? Seeing them.
Oh, no. I think that the dynamic between the five main cast members stays is always pretty solid. Yeah. I think it's great. And then the Carson and Ryan, like we said, obviously Ryan's character gets a lot better. Mm-hmm. I think that the dynamic with Carson improves a lot too as the show goes on.
Yeah.
He and Nancy are going to have their little tiffs, and they will throughout the season. But once they finally resolve that between them, well, of course. But once they finally resolve that, I love Carson's character. He's great.
Okay, good. Yeah. I just, as a Nancy Drew adaption, I wish that we could prioritize her relationship with Carson a little bit more, where I feel like it becomes kind of an afterthought. Not in this episode so much. Clearly this episode is very much about, we're bookended, right, by her relationship with Carson, which I do like. But I think that if we had started off on a really good foot and a really supportive foot and maintained that for a while, the break in that would have been much more heartbreaking for us to watch and much more affecting. Right. But yeah. And ultimately, I feel like Nancy's relationship with Carson is almost more important than her relationship with anybody else in the show. Like,
of course,
it's more important than her relationship with any of her friends, more important than her relationship with Nick or anybody else, like, is her relationship with Carson. Just because, you know, like, that's her father, right? Like, that's her dad. So, like, and especially thinking about that from the books, like the thing that allows Nancy to do what she does is Carson. And so I think to kind of start us off without that knowledge, I think it's a little bit of a wrong choice, but yeah.
Their arguments are always so gut-wrenchingly painful. It's like, stab me in the chest, why don't you, Carson? But it definitely gets better. And I don't know, if you feel that way now, just wait until the Hidden Staircase episode, because he really comes through for her in a big way in that episode. Yeah. And that will just make your heart flutter a lot.
Which one is that? Is that... What episode is that this season?
Seven?
Why did I have seven in my mind when I... It's 9.
Carson's great in that episode. So anyway.
Anyway, any other thoughts, Corey?
I mean, I could talk all day long about this show. You know that. But yeah. I will stop myself because I think that that's pretty much it for this episode. Okay. What about you?
Yeah. I don't think I have anything else. Flashlight score?
I'm going to give it a 5.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why not? What about you?
Oh, it's hard. I have things I would change, but I really enjoy this episode. I think it's a good episode of TV. 4.25.
That's really good.
Yeah. 4.25.
I need to take back my rating of the pilot because I did rate it too low. In retrospect, I think I'd give that one a 5. Yeah. I don't think that this episode is quite as good as the pilot. Mm-hmm. So maybe like a 4. But 4.25 is even better. So.
I think in this episode, I start to see what I feel are like the hallmarks of a plot going off the rails. Like I can start to see how it turns. You know what I mean?
Okay. Sure.
I mean, like, I don't want to spoil any future episodes, but like, I think there are just, but again, there are choices that I would make differently. But again, this show is not, I didn't make this show. This show maybe not for me. You know what I mean? But yeah. Personally, I would rate it 4.25.
Good.
Yeah. Okay.
Well.
Oh my
God. We have a very exciting episode coming up next.
We do. Because, I mean, if this show wasn't made for us, this next thing that we're covering was definitely made for us. Yes. So next up, I'm very excited. We are going to be covering the 2007 Nancy Drew movie with Emma Roberts.
This was the height of my Nancy Drew obsession, definitely, for when I was young.
Yeah. I remember being so excited for this movie, like the level of excitement. I'm sure you and I talked about it when it was happening.
Oh, definitely. Yeah.
Did we go and see it together? No.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. But yeah, no, the 2007 Emma Roberts movie. And I know that, you know, there's a lot you can say about this movie, but on the whole, I love this movie and I am very excited to get to talk about it, next time. So yeah.
Yes.
So join us then, regular Drews.
Yes. We'll see you then.
Thank you for listening to Regular Nancy Drew. Email us at regularnancydrew@gmail.com.
If you like this episode, make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.
You can also follow us on Instagram at @regularnancydrew and Twitter at @regularnd.
You can also support us on Patreon. Patrons at the $3 level vote on upcoming episode topics and get exclusive access to our Scoop Sesh series.
And all patrons receive early access to each episode as well as weekly bonus content.
And to all you regular Drews out there,
thanks for listening.